It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Bobby Bright had been hoping to win back his old congressional seat from the woman who took it from him 8 years ago. Look at the results here. That did not happen. You have Martha Roby coming in with a commanding lead, 67% of the vote. Bobby Bright trailing with 32% of the vote. Now, when you look at the last time that he was running against her back in 2010, Bobby Bright was running as a Democrat in a heavily Republican district. This time he was running as a Republican and was able to force this race into a runoff against four-term incumbent Roby. Well, Bright says he's always been conservative, but having to defend attacks linking him to his former party label was the biggest of many hurdles he faced in this contest.
It's tough to overcome a president's endorsement, a vice president's endorsement, U.S. Chamber of Commerce endorsement, and then endless financial resources. It's just an almost impossible task.
Now, Congresswoman Roby faced a big hurdle of her own. Many supporters of President Trump were still upset with her for temporarily withdrawing her support for him during his 2016 run for the White House after he was heard making comments about groping women in an old Access Hollywood tape. But after the election, Roby became a loyal supporter of Mr. Trump's agenda, and the president returned the favor by endorsing her in this runoff.
That I wake up each and every day and strive to be the absolute best representative for our values. This seat belongs to you, and I will never forget that as long as I have the privilege of being your member of Congress.
All right, that was Martha Roby, incumbent congresswoman who won her primary, and many people thought she might not win. She's not the favorite of conservatives. Although maybe she is now, since they voted her to be the nominee again. She only has a 50% rating with the conservative union. So here's the thing. We are in the midst of, every day we talk about issues. We talk about the terrible things happening in Congress. We can see with our own eyes the ridiculous decisions, the embarrassment that so many of them have become to us and our nation. They do nothing more often than they do anything. And when they finally do something, it's generally not a good thing. The good things are few and far between. And that's why this 2018 election is so important. So we have some primaries coming up. We have one coming up August the 7th. And no one understands the political map better than my next guest. Ken Cuccinelli is the head of the Senate Conservatives Fund. Among other things, he's the former attorney general in Virginia. He was the lead person challenging Obamacare way, way back and is still challenging Obamacare in a different way now. Maybe we'll get to that if we have a chance. But, Ken, good morning and thanks for joining me.
Good to be with you, as always.
Thanks, Ken. All right. So August 7th, we have four states, Kansas, Missouri, Washington, and Michigan. What can you say about those primaries?
Well, the big one from a conservative standpoint for the federal offices is John James, combat veteran, businessman, and African-American, by the way, conservative, running against Sandy Pensler, pro-choice, self-funding, liberal Republican for the U.S. Senate nomination in Michigan, a state that Donald Trump barely won in the 2016 election. And the winner of that nomination will take on Debbie Stabenow, Senator Debbie Stabenow, very liberal, but has not really had a serious challenge in years and years and years. So if the environment is good, that is definitely a place a conservative like John James can win. He's a very attractive candidate. He's really This is a race that's neck and neck because John James is so solid, so good, great resume, versus Sandy Pensler, who last time I looked, and this was weeks ago, had spent over $2 million on advertising so far. And that was before John James had really started spending the money he's been raising. But he doesn't have the bottomless bucket of money that Sandy Pensler does. So that's going to be the race to watch for conservatives. There's also a Missouri primary where Josh Hawley, the attorney general there, will presumably be nominated as the Republican to take on liberal Claire McCaskill. And she's really struggling right now with, first of all, they're neck and neck in polling, which is a great place for a challenger to be, especially before the primary is technically over for Josh Hawley. But also, this whole Supreme Court nomination has put in stark contrast why she doesn't fit Missouri. And she's really trapped between her crazy liberal base and her political instincts of self-preservation. So I don't expect any surprises in Missouri. I expect Josh Hawley to win that nomination. But in Michigan, it's going to be a close run. It's going to be a close run thing here for the next 2.5 weeks to see if John James becomes the nominee.
Who is behind Sandy Rensler? Or what? I think that's what you said her name is.
Pensler.
Who is behind her, well, supporting her, since her views are so off the rail?
Really, he is self-funding. I mean, he's running money versus grassroots.
Okay.
And, you know, he's been elected before, so he started out with name ID that John James didn't have. Nobody became familiar with John James while he's doing multiple combat tours in Iraq. But he came back home, took over the family business, has grown it by 100 employees. So he's had success there and has really taken the race to Stabenow. That's how he's been trying to win the nomination, which is a great way to do it because it rolls naturally into the general election. So, and this is a guy who's leaving no stone unturned. I mean, he's going into Detroit campaigning on a conservative message.
Wow.
And, and when you look at it, and we've talked about this, Sandy, when you look at a place like Detroit, it's a great example. It's an example of 60 years of Democrat failure. And John James goes in there and says, we've proven that what you're doing here doesn't work. Join me, support my campaign, let's go in a different direction. And he does it with credibility. He does it with a positive air about him. He's an attractive candidate. And we're really excited. Senate Conservatives Fund has endorsed him. Michigan is the toughest state we've endorsed a candidate in. But we think he has a path to victory.
All right. Now, that's August the 7th. Just to reiterate, those of you that are listening, these are your states. Kansas, Missouri, Washington, and Michigan are taking place on August the 7th. But there are a lot of other primaries in August, Ken. And so let's look ahead to those. August the 14th, I have written down here Connecticut, Vermont, Massachusetts, and Wisconsin. I'm assuming Wisconsin is probably the only state there that there's some hope for conservative, right?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, Wisconsin, you have Kevin Nicholson running against State Senator Leah Vukmir for that Senate nomination. And that race has waxed and waned. Kevin Nicholson leaped out to a big early lead, and Leah Vukmir has gradually clawed her way back into the contest. And various people have various opinions on the conservative scale for both of those candidates. So it's got more than the usual complexities to it. But the incumbent, Tammy Baldwin, is vulnerable. And again, this is another state that Trump just edged out a victory in. You'll recall that Hillary Clinton didn't even visit Wisconsin between her Democrat
That's
convention
right.
and Election Day because she so took it for granted. But if you look at what's gone on in Wisconsin in the last 8 years, I mean, we'll call it the Scott Walker phenomena. They have majorities in both houses. They have most of the congressional delegation. They have one of the two U.S. Senate seats, so that's Ron Johnson. You know, they've really built this from a blue state into, you still would have to say it's purple, but they've been winning the competition there. And so it's a race where I think when we get to the general, a lot of people are going to look at this as one of the flip opportunities in the country.
All right, so that's August the 14th, and that's Wisconsin. And then I don't know if you have anything to say about the primary between, well, not between, but that involves Alaska and Wyoming on August the 21st. Wyoming, I mean, is there anything to say about that?
You know, there was a possibility that John Barrasso would be challenged. John Barrasso is the U.S. Senator there. He's also the part of the McConnell leadership team, which does not speak well of him. And
no.
Especially in a state like Wyoming, which I think may have had the largest margin for Trump of any state in the country, something like 45 points or something incredible. And yet John Barrasso has just plugged along with Mitch McConnell. And, you know, there was a real prospect there that he'd have a meaningful challenge. It didn't materialize. It's too bad because these folks in leadership who are leading us down a bad path really, really do need to be challenged and ideally replaced. But that didn't happen with John Barrasso. He's on cruise control. He's going to roll right into the general and win it.
Well, the next two I'm really interested to hear. And that's August 28th. We have Arizona and Florida, and both of those states have real drama going on. So let's talk about them. How about Arizona first?
Yeah, Arizona has been a real garment-rending state for conservatives for a couple of years. Kelly Ward was challenging John McCain, but three other people got in the race as well. And one of the hardest things to do, it's hard enough to unseat an incumbent, but to unseat an incumbent in something other than head-to-head is very difficult. And Donald Trump endorsed John McCain back in 2016. And, you know, as we've seen, John McCain has behaved in such a grateful manner to the president.
Yeah.
Not.
Yeah. Well,
but,
and a few other things I can say about John McCain.
We have a different dynamic. Kelly Ward is in again, running hard, and she really just started from where she left off in 2016. She is running against Congresswoman Martha McSally, who is just a female John McCain. She hates conservatives and all the rest. But she's casting herself as pro-Trump, which is kind of a new thing for her, candidly. And then Sheriff Joe Arpaio got in here. He's 85 years old and really, really threw the race into a mess. I mean, what we now have, if you assume Joe Arpaio is conservative, we now have a classic conservative split going on between Arpaio and Ward. Mm. And McSally is the benefit of it.
Wow.
And like I said, she is no friend of conservatives. And one of the things about the August 28th primary is it's really not an August 28th primary. It's an August primary. They vote all month.
Oh, boy.
And so that the voting is going to start there in under 2 weeks, if I remember correctly.
Wow.
So that one is nearly upon us, even though it looks like an end-of-the-month primary. It's really the beginning. And we wouldn't be complete if we didn't note, Sandy, that the Democrats have, you and I would never vote for, but the Democrats have come up with a very strong opponent in Arizona, and Kristen Sinema, and she is going to run a very good race. She's already running a very good race. The Democrats are prioritizing that state because they see a clear opportunity to pick up a seat. They do have the advantage coming out of the primary, regardless of who the Republicans nominate. So that's gonna be tough.
Yeah,
Arizona is going to be very tough for us this year.
Okay, Ken, let's continue this on the other side of the break, because I know Florida's got a lot of drama also. A lot of things in play in the state of Florida, and Florida's a very important conservative state, very important red state. Well, at least it was. And we hope that, continues to be for the sake of the country and the policies that come out of conservative thinking. My guest is Ken Cuccinelli. We'll be right back after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. My special guest today, one of my favorites. I love talking to Ken Cuccinelli. He has the Senate Conservatives Fund. And by the way, Ken, you want to say a word about just pitch your organization for us? It was founded by Senator Jim DeMint, and I'm a fan. Let me just tell you, I'm a fan. Anything more that you want to add to that, like a website or something?
Well, we are at SenateConservatives.com, plural, Senate Conservatives. We don't want just one. And we were founded by then-Senator Jim DeMint, who I consider to be one of the greatest senators America's ever had. And he was a fighter. He was willing to fight. He's why we got rid of earmarks. I mean, you can almost single-handedly lay that at Jim DeMint's feet. He fought the leadership when they were wrong, and he realized that he needed to do that if America was going to move in a good direction. And so part of his efforts in that regard was to found the Senate Conservatives Fund so that a whole lot of small donors who share a worldview like you and I have, Sandy, can get together and support candidates who meet a serious standard for conservative accomplishment. And Senate Conservatives Fund will not endorse candidates below our high standards. So in 2016, aside from incumbent Senator Mike Lee, we were literally only supporting one candidate in the general election, and that was Daryl Glenn in Colorado. And the leadership abandoned Daryl Glenn, African-American veteran, you know, check every box, already elected in the state, and the leadership abandoned him, but we did not. And we don't just endorse Republicans, we only endorse conservatives, and that's how Jim DeMint set us up, and that's how we've run for years. So folks who want to know that they're putting their money behind solid conservatives can help us at SenateConservatives.com. That's all we do, is high-level, hard-fighting conservatives. That's
and
all
I
we
have
support.
To- Yeah, and I have to say that if you and I hope that you listening to me want to give, and maybe you're not a millionaire, as Ken is just describing, but you can give something. This is a much better way to help us take us the country in the right direction is to give directly to SenateConservatives.com instead of the party, because you know what?
Oh, absolutely.
I don't have to explain it.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, so Ken, let's go back to these. We have one more. Now, before we leave Arizona, though, because you described Kelly Ward's back in the race, we've got a conservative split between her and Joe Arpaio. Martha McSally is not a conservative. So it's a tough state. You say they have a great Democratic challenger. But here's the thing. I know that the Dems have targeted Arizona. What do you know? Is it possible to know how their demographics have shifted, and if they are still a pretty red state? Or I never understood why they
They lean red. I mean, President Trump won Arizona. I will tell you, I was working for Senator Cruz in the primary, and Donald Trump, people don't remember this now, trounced in Arizona. I mean, romped in Arizona. He did better there than I think any state previous in the whole cycle. So, I mean, this is not a state like my home state, like Virginia, where you've got so much federal government ties and so forth, where they react negatively to the president. That's not the case in Arizona. And, it is a different dynamic. Their conservatives have a more libertarian, liberty-focused streak than the average across the country. So you have that at play as well. And of course, they're a border state. Illegal immigration is an enormous issue for them. And the continuing failure of Republican leadership, not the president, but the Republicans in Congress, to actually address it head on, I think hurts Republican candidates, because a lot of our people there in Arizona say, you know, why do I bother? These people never do what they say they're going to do, and yet we keep voting for them. So that hurts candidates like Kelly Ward. It hurts candidates like Joe Arpaio.
Yeah, but I hope they don't give up, because how badly we need. All right, so let's talk about Florida.
Yeah, Florida is very interesting, in some ways it's a flip of what we're used to. So Governor Rick Scott has not been particularly conservative. He hasn't been terrible from a conservative perspective, but he's not someone who is going to get a Senate Conservatives Fund endorsement, but he can self-fund in one of the most expensive states in the country. you know, your listeners think about it, wherever they may live, think about these media markets: Miami, Tampa, Tallahassee. I mean, they have some of the biggest, most expensive media markets in the whole country, and that means it's hard to raise the money to run a Senate race there, and yet Rick Scott walks in with a checkbook that he can do it with.
Wow.
And so Ben Nelson, the Democrat, has got a real tough race on his hands. And this race is already neck and neck. And as you noted, Florida has importance beyond just this one Senate seat. It's just perennially seems to be where the presidential races are rising or falling, right? And so the ability of one side or the other to win this has implications beyond 2018. You can bet that President Donald Trump will be down there campaigning, much as he will in a lot of these swing states. So
is there any
polling? That's going to be a race to watch.
Is there any polling? Let me clarify something. The primaries on the 28th, so does Rick Scott have to go through a primary?
He does, but there's no challenge.
Okay, all right.
No challenge.
All right.
He cleared the field, is how that would be put.
Okay, all right. So
he
there you go.
The field.
That's the upcoming primaries for those of you in those states. And as always, I encourage you, please, to pay attention and get involved. You must. Don't wait till the day before. Look for voter guides, afa.net. We have a great voter guide. It doesn't cover, I think it covers, well, I'm not sure how many states at this point, but it's afa.net. It's easy to access, and you can check it, afaaction.net. And it's our voter guide. We'll put it on our Facebook page again so that you can link to it. But I want to change the subject, and I want to do it by playing a clip here. This was Senator Dick Durbin on the, I believe on the floor of the Senate, or maybe he was just being interviewed in the hallway, and here he is.
My colleagues in the Senate on the Democratic side are people of integrity. They make up their own minds. At best, I can discuss it with them and try to bring them to my point of view on something as historic and important as the appointment to the vacancy on the Supreme Court. There's not going to be any pressure coming down from above. These individuals have to make up their own mind on this issue. All we've asked them to do is wait until we have more facts, more information. There's a lot of documentation that needs to be raised and at least considered by the Judiciary Committee before anyone knows the full story of Brett Kavanaugh.
All right, so there are people of integrity, the Democratic senators.
Wow.
Was that you whistling?
I mean, how often do you hear him cutting his people loose like that? I mean, this is facing the political reality of 2018 right in the face if you're Chuck Schumer.
All right, so explain that, because we're talking about the president nominated Brett Kavanaugh to be the next Supreme Court justice.
Sure, so let's look at it from, instead of talking about it from the perspective of Washington, let's pick some states. If you're John Tester in Montana and you're defending against an outstanding candidate like Matt Rosendale, the state auditor, conservative, liberty-minded candidate running against you, and you're confronted with this Kavanaugh nomination, do you really want to be put all over TV standing next to Chuck Schumer? We're going to fight no matter what, blah, blah, that kind of language? Of course you don't. Well, and Chuck Schumer has recognized that. That's what we just heard in that clip. I mean, pick your state. Joe Manchin in West Virginia. Patrick Morrisey is lashing Manchin over judges, just lashing him over them. Joe Donnelly is taking a beating in Indiana from Mike Braun, outstanding businessman and state rep, solid conservative who won a three-way primary there. You know, these folks are really putting the Democrats on the hot seat. Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota. Do you want to be standing with Chuck Schumer against President Trump's Supreme Court nominee? I don't think so. The politics of this are outstanding for our conservative candidates. Outstanding.
So,
I wouldn't know if they'd be better if Amy Barrett was the nominee, but
right. I know. All right. So as you look again at the map, Ken, and I know you're always counting and figuring and speculating, if you were to give the most optimistic outcome of how many seats the Republicans could take in the Senate, what would that look like? And what's the most pessimistic outcome you see happening?
Probably the most optimistic that's within reason is five or six, and realize that's the real high end. On the low end, I see them just holding steady. I see no change. I think that's the low end. If you ask me to predict, it'd be 2 or 3 seat gain for the Republicans. And from a conservative standpoint, this could also be 2 or 3 conservative seats. I mean, if you get a Patrick Morrissey over the top with Joe Manchin or Mike Braun in Indiana or Josh Hawley with Claire McCaskill or Matt Rosendale in Montana, I mean, you don't just get a Republican instead of a Democrat. You get a conservative. You get a solid conservative with a track record going to the Senate of the likes of, you know, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul. I mean, that's what we need more of if we're going to finally start pushing, you know, Kentucky's tortoise there, Mitch McConnell, to start loving America again. And
well said.
He's part of the problem. He's part of the problem, and you don't fix that problem without more conservatives who are willing to fight.
No, and that's just, I think you said this, but I want to reiterate, that's what Senate Conservatives Fund has done since Jim DeMint founded it. You guys were responsible for Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee, and I'm not sure if there were others. There were others, I think. Ron Johnson, maybe.
There are 11 U.S. senators in the U.S. Senate who are SCF senators, and they are the most conservative senators in the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, exactly.
Just,
so
that's the block. That's where they come from.
Yes, makes a huge difference. All right, so
absolutely.
Let's talk about, I heard something yesterday, Ken, coming out of Washington, that Senate leadership is wanting to hold off the vote on Brett Kavanaugh until the day before the election.
I hope not.
That's what I heard. And, of course, the problem, all right, you know, I should just stop and let you respond to that.
The problem with it is the Supreme Court term starts the first week of October, and that's irresponsible.
Totally.
And the political benefits will outlast the vote. But if the idea is we want to bleed this out politically right up to the election, I mean, I get that from politics. I already was making political comments, and you know, Sandy, I'm sort of an idealist lawyer from one of my days as Attorney General in Virginia. And but the reality is you've got a Supreme Court. They've got to do their job. Unfortunately, they have been vested with too much power. Certainly by the standards the Founding Fathers envisioned, the Supreme Court has far more power today than they ever envisioned. It was actually one of the things Thomas Jefferson warned about. But, there we are. And so long as that's going to be the case, we need to fill those seats on time to hear cases and to move the Supreme Court's docket. It's not something that gets talked about very much, but they hear so few cases. Frankly, I consider them as institution as lazy. And so there's so few cases to begin with. You don't want a new justice to miss a month's worth of cases at the beginning of the term. That would just not be responsible.
No, it isn't responsible. And it's putting the political considerations against much larger issues for the country, that whatever comes up in the October session. And I'm not sure, maybe you've been following that. I don't know what will come up, but it's always important things. And the court is so split. We need him on that court for that session. That's the point that you're trying to make. Let me ask you about something else, because, and this is a little, this is not about the Senate, this is about the House. You and I both have been doing what we can to help Jim Jordan become the Speaker of the House. I'll just say that out loud.
Right.
I've been talking about it for weeks.
As we should, yes.
All right, so what's your take on what's happening with that?
Well, I think that Jim continues to be recognized, including within his caucus, as one of the best fighters against the FBI and DOJ misbehavior. He is the leader, is recognized as such in the last conference meeting by President Trump, who called him out and by name. Jim Jordan is fighting harder than anybody else. That kind of comment from the president in front of the entire conference. Jim is an outstanding articulator of the conservative position and the Republican position, and he's willing to fight, unlike so many others. And so he's making headway. I'd like to see that happening faster. But the key, and this is where your listeners come in, the absolute key for Jim Jordan to become the next speaker is that your listeners and lots of other people across the country have to call and bug, frankly, their Republican congressman and urge, push, demand that they support Jim Jordan for speaker. Without a grassroots uprising on Jim Jordan's behalf, we're just going to get more of the same. We're going to get a Kevin McCarthy or a Steve Scalise, somebody who will change nothing in how the House operates.
Right. Doesn't hold hearings, doesn't hold anybody accountable. It's really disgraceful. It is disgraceful what John Boehner and Paul Ryan have done in their leadership. We have to get new leadership, and Jim Jordan is the man. So, all right, Ken, listen, it's always great to talk to you. Ken Cuccinelli with Senate Conservatives Fund. It's SenateConservatives.com, SenateConservatives.com. Ken, thanks much. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Good to be with you, Sandy.
Thank you. We'll be right back right after this.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Supreme Court on the line. Brian Kelly deserted Donald Trump, helping Hillary Clinton's campaign. When it mattered most, Brian Kelly stood with Hillary Clinton, not us. Now President Trump is standing with Bill Schuette.
You're a really great friend of mine and a great attorney general, the next governor of Michigan, Bill Schuette.
Bill Schuette, endorsed by President Trump.
The next governor of Michigan, Bill Schuette.
All right, so that's a big race coming up in Michigan next Tuesday, the primary. And in the Republican side of this primary, there are three top candidates. You heard the ad right there for Bill Schuette, and he's mentioning Brian Kelly. And then the person that wasn't mentioned is the man we're going to talk to now. It's Patrick Kolbeck. He's a senator, state senator in Michigan. He's running for governor in the state of Michigan. And how Michigan could use a really strong, good, conservative governor. So with that said, welcome to the show, Senator Kolbeck.
Oh, it's an honor to be with you, Sandy.
All right, I'm just going to ask you a few questions just so we can get acquainted with you just a little bit. What did you do before you served in the state Senate?
My background actually is an aerospace engineer. I've been a manager consultant and a small business owner and actually an author.
All right. And I'm assuming you have a family. Most people do.
Yes, me and my wife, and I'm the only kid in the family. we've been married over 22 years, and our wedding vows did not include anything like this. It's supposed to be a nice, quiet life with me as an engineer and her as a pediatrician, but God's got other plans.
Yes, he does, and a sense of humor with those plans. But
absolutely.
Well, so how did you get in politics?
Well, it was a wake-up call in faith, and we got more involved in politics, our first political event ever, if you don't include church council. It was attending a Tea Party event. And my wife and I dragged a sign that said, "The people are broke, the Constitution isn't. And it was actually a really wonderful event, made some lifetime friends. And for those folks who are struggling with what is a Tea Partier, it's what we used to call being an American. We should follow our Constitution. We shouldn't spend more than we take in. That's what we really, that motivated us to liquidate all of our retirement savings and actually run for the Michigan Senate in 2010 for our first political office. So this is, for us, this is a call of faith. We're in it. And I've been serving as the most conservative state senator in Michigan for quite a while because I actually follow through on what I said I'd do. This isn't about ladder climbing. This is about going off and serving folks. And we're sick and tired of the way we've been represented for quite a few years. And it's about time that we showed how our government's supposed to work.
You know, I was reading information on you, Patrick, and I understand that you have been removed from committees. You have no leadership assignments. That you've sort of been, we see this happening in Washington, you know. It's happening to you in Michigan in the state Senate. I guess that's because it's democratically controlled, right?
No, it's actually Republican controlled. Republican Senate Majority Leader. When I asked him why, my first term, I was on leadership team I was also the budget chair for the State Police and Department of Military and Veterans Affairs budget. Had an exemplary record there. Matter of fact, helped turn around Michigan from one of the worst states for veteran services to number two in the nation. So when I found out that I wasn't getting any chairmanships for my second term, I asked the Senate Majority Leader, what's going on here? And he said, you were too vocal in your opposition to the expansion of Obamacare in Michigan, known as Medicaid expansion or Healthy Michigan, which, by the way, I'm on the Republican side of that. And number two, I was too vocal in my opposition to Common Core standards. And normally that would get promotion if you're actually promoting the platform. That's not the way it works. And that actually inspired me to write a book called Wrestling Gators, An Outsider's Guide to Draining the Swamp. And it's important that we understand who's serving who. And a lot of times I'm finding out that the folks that are up there are serving themselves, not the best interest.
Absolutely. And it starts at the state level, and then it reaches full bloom at the federal level. Because, you know, Paul Ryan and also John Boehner punished conservatives in the House routinely, took away their expenses to run their offices. Did not give them campaign money to run their races every 2 years, which is a burden, you know, for each of them. And took away their chairmanships, removed them from committees. It's been restored somewhat, they're still. If they can punish conservatives, they do. They get angry with them, and so
they do.
It
is not a pleasant experience, but you know, you really truly got to stay focused on what's noble, true, excellent, praiseworthy. That's why we built such a great grassroots following. It's because they've seen what I've done and what I've been willing to sacrifice on behalf of staying true to the principles I ran for, and it resonates. We got over 3,000 volunteers on the ground, and we're being outspent 10-1, but we are actually neck and neck with the Attorney General and the Lieutenant Governor in this race. That is a testament to our grassroots strength.
Yep, absolutely. You know, I noticed also that you were the chairperson of Ted Cruz's presidential campaign in Michigan, which makes me laugh because I remember hearing him say, when he first got to the Senate, I hope it's not happening now, it could be, that the senators wouldn't even eat with him. He was shunned in the dining hall.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I
mean, that's how.
Did you read his book, A Time for Truth?
I didn't.
Well, I talk about that book in my book, actually. I was actually reading it. It talks about what happened inside the swamp. I mean, when you actually go off and take stands and what the retribution is. I was reading it to my wife, and it was so riveting. I never do this, but it was exactly what's happening to me in the Michigan Senate. And it's about time that we had people taking stands and saying enough is enough. We got to serve the people.
Let's talk about some of the things, Patrick, that you know, like if you were king, some of these issues they have. You know, a governor can't just wave a magic wand and make these things happen. But if you could. What kinds of things would you do in your state? What would you do? And I mean, what would be sort of the order of your priorities?
Well, Michigan, I talk a lot about principled solutions, but I want to have first and foremost a restoration of some fundamental principles, like the fact that the government works for us, not the other way around. When you take that perspective, you start focusing on what's going to ease the burdens of the people in our state. And for me, that means the elimination of our state personal income tax and what we have called the senior pension tax. I actually taxed pensions back a few years ago, and which is not the right message to send to seniors. So I've got a plan to do that. Also, we've got an issue with our infrastructure. All the plans that come forward on fixing our infrastructure involving throwing more money at it, I actually got a different approach as an engineer. I say, let's focus upon quality. If you build roads that last longer, your total life cycle costs go down. So that's an important policy position for me. And also, Michigan has the most expensive auto insurance rate in the whole country by a pretty wide margin. We're actually double the national average, and that's due to our pretty generous no-fault system. So I've got a systematic approach to go off and reform the auto insurance by removing a lot of state mandates, and it's those mandates that are driving up the cost of insurance in the state. And then in education, get rid of Common Core standards and get back to focusing on parents, teachers, and students. What a concept. That's what works.
Yeah.
And so those are some of the key tenets. I mean, I'm a policy wonk, so I could easily take up the next 3 days going into detail in a lot of different areas, but those are the high hitters.
But people need to know where you stand. I know you've also given testimony in opposition to sanctuary cities and a lot of other things. So you've been, you've taken a strong stand and you've paid the price, as you've described in the Senate in Michigan. That's not funny. I know it's not. It's terrible to be isolated like that. That's what the left does, you know. They target
you. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's about name calling. And mm-hmm. what I've learned is that name calling is the last resort of the intellectually bankrupt. If you don't have an argument, you resort to name calling.
That's right. Absolutely right. And it's a method, again, goes back to the old, well, in modern day America, Saul Alinsky was our a socialist
yep.
communist writing about how you target and embarrass and destroy people on an individual basis, and that's how you win. That's how you take power. And he was
yeah.
right. We see this happening
right.
almost every day, you know?
Right. It's called they fix the target, and then they try to marginalize you, and then they yeah. pile on. That's rule number 13 in particular. And they've done this to me on an issue I have with one of the Democratic gubernatorial candidates. His name is Dr. Abdel Sayed, even though he's not a doctor. And I highlighted his affiliation with the Muslim Brotherhood, and it's a very tangible association. And they say that it's unsubstantiated. I've got folks like General Jerry Boykin supporting me, Trevor Loudon, folks that understand what's really going on here. They said, no, I'm spot on. And when I challenged him in front of 150 members of the Michigan Press Association on this, he actually had the audacity of saying, you may not hate Muslims, but Muslims definitely hate you. That's what happens when you stand up on it. That is the definition of hate speech, I think. I'm an engineer, so I'm a little slow on this whole English thing, but I think that's the definition of hate speech. And when you get that out there, there's such a bias in the media. You know, not one media outlet headlined that.
I believe that. Of course I do. I know exactly how that works. Yeah, it's just, and that's a whole other issue. That is a whole other issue. But trust me, Patrick, that's an issue that I have a vested interest in. You know, I was thinking about there's a Muslim Brotherhood operative who's infiltrated the conservative movement in Washington. And we actually have a tape of him saying that we love death more than they love life. He's actually saying that on tape. And yet Republicans have bent over backwards, starting in the Bush administration, to defend him.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's not. He's a great guy. There's nothing wrong with him. He's nice. Shame on you. I've been shamed, actually. So I know how that works.
On the bright side, you know, there's a great market for people that know how to get sand out of people's ears.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? Well, if this governor's race doesn't work out, maybe you can go into that and get back your life savings. But
that's true. We got to make up for some lost time here. That's
yeah, exactly. All right. I'm curious to know who's behind Brian Kelly. Who's supporting
him? Behind him?
Yeah.
Well, it's usually more of the big government side. I actually get along well with Brian Kelly from a personal basis. I think he's been a perfect gentleman for me throughout this whole race and throughout my tenure in there. But he has a different approach to solving problems that generally gets him more financial backing. So the folks who like to pull the levers of government for their own financial benefit, they tend to side with him. They had a study done a while back on who supports corporate subsidies in the state. And Bill Schuette, one of the candidates, 100% of the time he was asked to vote in support of a corporate subsidy, he supported it. Brian was about 95%. I came in with an all-time record of 3.5% for Michigan senators and best record in over two decades. And I think our campaign account balances correlate to those ability to support subsidies. So you'll get an idea that a lot of the people that support him are the folks that are typically in the area where they think government knows best as opposed to the people.
Well, how about Bill Schuette? And just quickly, if you can, would you say the
Bill
same thing?
Yeah, same thing, except I think his type of supporters are, he's been in politics for over three decades. So most of the time when you ask, why do you support Schuette? They say, well, I've known him for a decade. And that's about as deep as it goes. So.
Why did President Trump endorse him?
My sources say that it was because Pam Bondi, the attorney general out in Florida, had a close relationship with the president and a close relationship with Bill, and it was through her that she got that. But, you know, 92% of the Michigan Trump Republicans actually support me, so I've been out on the ground having the president's back on some key issues well before Bill Schuette ever got on the page doing that, and it's kind of frustrating because we're out there talking to the grassroots. The only time Bill Schuette's out is when the president or vice president is out there. So I don't know. We're the ones giving the people a voice. He's just giving himself a voice.
Yep. All right. Well, so the primary is next Tuesday.
Yeah, it's coming up
right?
pretty quick. And
yeah,
folks want to help out with the old campaign, they can go to ColbeckForGovernor.com. And because I'm one of those oddballs that's actually running on my record, not away from it, you want to see what I've been doing, all the stuff that led to me losing committee seats and all that fun stuff, go to morninginmichigan.com. That's not M-O-U-R. That's M-O-R-N-I-N-G. And you can see all my floor speeches, solutions, everything is up there. And I want to make sure everybody does an informed decision. We think we're the best candidate. I'm an engineer that's focused on solving problems, not just talking about them. And it's a lot of people find that refreshing. And we are blessed with the best ground team ever, I think, in a gubernatorial race here in Michigan.
You know, it's funny. I was just in Chicago, and Jeannie Ives challenged the governor. Jeannie is a rock rib conservative. She ran politically incorrect commercials. She had to disengage from any kind of help from Republican establishment, and they developed their own grassroots, and she nearly beat Governor Rauner. She just a few points, and she would have beat him. It was just a miraculous effort. So you can...
I think we're on the verge of an upset here in Michigan. This is going to be a big deal, because when it happens, people are going to ask, well, why wasn't anybody talking about Colbeck in the polls? Why wasn't anybody giving him money, or why didn't anybody give him a chance? And it's going to force a lot of reflection, and it's going to be the shot heard around the world. So I'm looking forward to August 7th.
Senator Patrick Colbeck, thank you, Senator, and we wish you the best in Tuesday's primary.
Thank you, Sandy.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Keep up all the good work.
Thanks. You too. We're working at the same thing. Thank you so much, sir.